Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you, and then we'll get down to business. We have a lot to discuss, some interesting topics. So here we go. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. You made it. You made it back safe from Plattsburgh.
And no quarters.
Actually, he sounded for at least 15 miles. He sounded really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, welcome back.
He sounded as good as when he doesn't talk into the microphone here.
I'm speaking
directly
right
into it now. Yes, you're doing very today. You're getting the hang of this radio.
What do
thing.
You know? You're not a broadcaster. You're a scribe.
She is the director of the journalism program at UAlbany.
Thank you. Yes, I am.
That is what you are. And Rosemary Armeo, good morning. Welcome to the program. Corporate attorney Rich Honan is with us for the second time this week. Thank you very much.
I know. You let me come back.
You come back. So Monday,
only as a target.
Monday, we were talking about the primary. Now, of course, the dust has settled on that. What was your takeaway, sir?
The same as yours. No real big surprise, right? I mean, on either side, maybe a little bit in the amount of the wins on both sides, but no big surprise.
How come Trump does so well, Ridge?
First, you are comparing Trump to Hillary. Voters on the Republican side are comparing Trump to Ted Cruz.
No, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? So it's a little bit of a Faustian choice there. And then there's Kasich, but that's a thrown away vote. You know, so I think he does well among Republicans because there's really a very limited amount of choices. It's just tough. I mean, are you going to, Cruz stands for a very defined set of values that a lot of people don't agree with.
He attacked New York. Yeah. I mean, when you attack New York, you're going to get your behind kicked.
But the other thing about Trump is the same thing we've been saying all along while we all still continue to wait for the bubble to burst, right? There are times when he articulates, either levels of frustration or his ability or the desire to avoid the kind of unforced errors that we all believe the United States has been making over the last 7 years. And I think on both sides we may point to different examples, but I think we believe that the United States has kind of gone out of its way in some ways to make some big mistakes over the last 20 years.
I think when you make a mistake, it's not that you're going out of your way to make a mistake. It's that you made a mistake, don't you think?
No, I think that, for example, on the conservative side, and I don't want to keep harping on this, but we would say that the amount of time and energy that went into something like the Iran deal, when if 1% of that time and energy had gone to maybe reaching across aisles or trying to get something done on things like truly fixing healthcare or truly fixing immigration, we think that would have been better rather than the unforced error part of that was in making that a priority and devoting that. And I'm sure there's plenty of things on your side as well.
Boy, do I think that's a sort of phony argument. The real thing about the Republicans in the Congress are they just don't want to give Obama a break no matter what he does. That's all that this is all about. It has not to do with if they had only spent more time, we would have gone along with them and given you a proper health care system. Nah, they just
Day one, Alan? I that's where I disagree. I don't think it was from day one. I think there was probably an admittedly narrow window, but I think there was a window of openness, like there always is, for some period. And I think he went out of his way to shut that window closed.
You're absolutely wrong about the Iran deal. That was the time and money and effort that went into that is already worth it. The amount of facilities, the number of facilities shut down in Iran already goes beyond what Israel or any other power trying to fight Iran, and they admit it themselves, have been able to accomplish. That's just on day one. So, yes, that was worth it.
And
for
Iraq.
World peace. And the end of and to try to lower the temperature and the danger in the Middle East. Of course, that was worth it.
And it has been lowered.
Yes.
This is your idea of a lowered temperature in the Middle East?
Yes, sir. It is. There's fewer nuclear facilities and weapons there now because
first of all,
that deal.
You don't know that, and none of
us
know that.
Well, Netanyahu has said it. That's what I'm basing
well,
it on.
Well, because, but
even he
it's
has
also
admitted
because
it.
That they're being allowed to upgrade all of their centrifuges nationwide and then put them in military facilities where everybody agrees we're not allowed to look.
Well, I you know, no one negotiated a better deal, Rich. Could it be the best it is? No, but it's the first deal that we've had with them. And we still
have
the measures to go back. We do have a deal.
And
I do agree with you about Obama came in saying, I'm going to lower the tension between the two sides. I'm going to be the nonpartisan. And I think from the very beginning, including the bailout, that which everyone agreed was necessary, the people were behind it, and he accepted a deal put through by the Democrats that was filled with pork. That was the time when he should have said, our country is going to, his own party filled it with pork. He could have said, stop it, knock it off, give me something that's real. With this, now's the time to come together. And he missed that opportunity. And he would say it's because he was trying to save the economy. But I have said for 7 years that he missed a big chance to really bring the parties together.
Yeah, I actually on the stimulus, I very much agree with you. I thought that basically $1 trillion. I thought that was money that was just crying out for infrastructure upgrades throughout the United States. Could have put truly shovel ready projects. Could have put thousands of people to work. Almost. I don't want to say WPA like, but almost like WPA like, TVA like.
And who would have been against that? And who could have argued against
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And instead, it was the money was part. A lot of it was squandered, and I think that was a big missed opportunity. I also think, by the way, a huge missed opportunity by the Obama administration. This is going to sound odd coming from me, was the ability to really fix the financial system. Was to change the way that we regulated this whole idea that we the job just became reinflating the credit bubble rather than kind of eliminating the need for companies to live on credit.
I thought that was a big missed opportunity. Sweeping bills, a health care bill that really made a difference, changing the financial system, fixing Social Security, the tax code, name them, all the things that we all agree need work. You need two parties working together, and we have not had that.
All I know is we're getting some interesting mail. John wrote, Obama handed the Republicans in Congress their own health care plan. In other words, they invented it, Ramiro, from the 90s. He shut down any debate on other options. How is that not reaching across the aisle, says John. Robert says, Republicans are always complaining about Obama not dealing with the other side of the aisle because they want us to forget that they're the obstinate ones who from day one, that was my words, day one became the petulant children who always said no when they acted at all. So that's what I have to say.
Well, but that's the role. That may be true, but that's the role of the leader. You know, we always talk about FDR. We talk about Lyndon Johnson. We even talk about Reagan and Bill Clinton in taking the time and doing the blocking and tackling that's needed to go talk to lowly Congress people, basically, and putting aside the ego and putting aside the power of the office.
I just want to point out that this discussion just came out of the introduction. I haven't even asked a question yet. Isn't that odd? Anyway, so that's pretty good.
Very good.
Yeah, very good discussion. So let me ask about, let me talk about delegate math for a minute. So Donald Trump is saying that he can have well into the 1400s as far as delegates, and he'll have more than
enough
to go into the convention.
Right?
And he has the people in the campaign now. He had an interview with the New York Times yesterday. I guess it was Tuesday the interview was conducted. It was published today. And then there is also there's the math. Bernie Sanders went back to Burlington yesterday, sat down with his team, and said that they see a way of getting the delegates necessary to win in the convention, which is basically to win many states and then turn around and say to those superdelegates, we want you to come with us. And the point that many are making is, but if you've been insulting those superdelegates throughout the process, how willing are they going to be then to come with you?
It's ridiculous. He's not going to get that. But he needs an excuse to stay, a rationale. Excuse is a bad word, but a rationale to stay in the fight through the convention. And if he says, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to pull those superdelegates over to the other side of the aisle, it gives him the public rationale for staying in.
Does he even need that much, though? Can't he just say, I'm talking about important issues that have struck a chord with a big, important demographic in our party that has been heretofore has been fairly quiet since 2008?
Young people. And that's why he's getting all the votes.
Yeah, but isn't that enough for him?
But the question that is asked in the headline of the Washington Post article is, what does Bernie want? So then I pose that question to you in the sense of the discussion we were having yesterday, which is, what does Bernie want that he can achieve without hurting a Democratic chance for the White House?
Hillary was in this position in 2008, where she could she had enough delegates and enough support, she could easily go and did go to the convention. But around this time, when it became evident that Obama was going to get it, she changed her tone. The attacks ended, and it became a discussion about much more about issues. And I think that's why she ended up as Secretary of State. I don't think it was a deal, but I think that helped for it. And that's what they're looking to see if Bernie does now.
Yeah,
and what
happen,
he can
right?
do. He won't run for president again, I predict. He's simply too old.
Yeah.
But he now goes into the Senate as an ally and a co-leader of the progressive movement with Elizabeth Warren. And that's a lot of power and clout. They have instant media entree. They have credibility. They have a huge following. And good luck about keeping young people engaged. Obama had a huge, huge following, and he never kept them engaged. I think that's much harder to do than we think it is.
Agreed. I think that Bernie, I mean, we all know that at the convention, he's going to make the long, heartfelt speech, right,
where he throws his
support to Hillary, and he'll be acclaimed as a peacemaker and all that, and he'll be, he'll stump with her on the campaign.
Political theater, and that's important. It's like Clinton
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
Let's vote for Obama by acclaim rather than a vote. That's important. That's the theater of it.
But that doesn't hurt the party in the meantime, does it?
Well, I don't really see it.
I mean, what we were talking about yesterday and the hurting of the party is if he continues at the level of attacks that he's had over the last several weeks in New York.
Yeah.
There is some thought, at least what I was seeing last night, that may continue into Pennsylvania. See how Pennsylvania goes, and then after that, that there would be an expectation that the tone would change.
It didn't work. You know, that's another thing. I mean,
yes.
Rubio tried the attack thing, and that was disastrous. It did not work very well for Sanders in New York. I guess he's looking at the way the voting goes the way it's set up in Pennsylvania, which is much different than New York also.
What's the term? There was a term about the Pennsylvania voting. I'm trying to get to that. It's like the Pennsylvania loophole vote. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it has to do with the congressional districts. Where the same thing we have, you know, the rules are you get a majority, you get all three, you get a plurality, I believe. But then there's also what you could almost talk about as undesignated people who run on a separate list for delegate, and that's the loophole that you don't know what you're voting.
A non-binding loophole primary, and no other state leaves so many delegates unbound.
Mm-hmm. Exactly,
54 unpledged delegates, so allowed to vote for whomever they please at the convention. That's because it conducts a loophole primary in two parts. First is the beauty contest. Their words. Which is a presidential primary preference vote. The winner of the beauty contest gets all of Pennsylvania's 17 at-large and bonus delegates, but the remaining 54, the three delegates awarded to each congressional district, are unbound and elected in the delegate selection primary. In this part, voters, this is from Nate Cohn, by the way, in this part, voters directly elect delegates to the national convention. What makes Pennsylvania's GOP delegate selection primary so distinctive is that the ballot includes no guidance on whom a delegate will support at the national convention.
That's just beautiful, isn't it? It's just, you know, we always, every year, every four
do whatever
years,
you want.
Every 4 years we ask, are these the best five or seven or three people?
Right.
And
the answer is
now we know why.
A resounding no.
Yeah, but I think we, if nothing else, through both on the Republican and the Democratic side, we've certainly learned that the arcane rules of, of you know, both of the internal parties and then the state rules within the internal parties are just so, I won't call it corrupt. I'll say it's certainly skewed towards preserving the status quo.
That's right. But what I'd like to know, Rich, and maybe you being as smart as you are could tell me the answer to this, which is when they come up with these arcane rules, they clearly have a rationale for establishing them, right? They think somehow this is going to help the people in power.
Right.
I'd like to know exactly how that always works because circumstances, Rich, change.
Because the people, I think it's because the people in power ultimately appoint, make the decision on who's going to run for delegate. Who's going to become the delegates,
right?
So if you, because I remember back in '94 when I had my dalliance with running for office, there, you know, we were talking.
Remind everybody what you ran for.
I ran. It was so short lived. I ran for state senator on the Democratic side, and I
in, on the what side?
On the I was a Democrat. I didn't make as much money back then, so I was a Democrat. there was a. It was in 1994. It was like an eight person. I came in like ninth in an eight person primary, but ran through the primary and lost. Jim McCaffrey won the Democratic nomination, and he lost to Mike Hoblock, who moved from county executive to state senator. And Alan, to answer your question, I learned then that the party leaders in the Democratic Party didn't want to win that election because when Hoblock was the county executive, he had hundreds and hundreds of patronage jobs at his disposal. But when he moved over to the Senate, he had very few. Uh-huh. The Democrats wanted those patronage jobs back, and they were willing to give up the Senate seat to get the county executive seat.
I don't know.
Seat.
These rules are not
Just
brand new.
Just have about 30
new
seconds,
for
but go
okay.
ahead.
The rules are not brand new. In 2008, the same rules were in effect, and Hillary was still the establishment character choice,
candidate.
And she lost then. So I'm not so sure that it's evident that the rules keep the status quo.
I think
quo.
Obama had a much better ground game than you would give credit for
totally
in 08.
She learned from it. She's copied
it. And I think he caught a lot of people by surprise.
We have a break. We will be right back and continue our conversation. Alan, Rosemary, Rich, and we'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Rich Honan make up the panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a lot of letters.
Oh, boy.
So we'll get to those, and then we will make a quick turn and go to all of the other topics, which are really quite fascinating, I think. So we'll leave time for those. But here are some letters.
All right. Ethan says, what's hurting the Democratic Party is the DNC, the Democrat National Committee, and Hillary Clinton misreporting the results of more than 10 caucus sites in Colorado, having people purged from the voter rolls in Arizona, and now voter suppression in New York. I was told this past weekend that they would try to, quote, pull in Arizona, and they did. I cannot vote for this woman in the fall. Really? And you'd like to have four people on the Supreme Court that you might not approve of in the most powerful institution in America? Okay. I'm hearing Republican amnesia this morning, says Norman. How do you go and extend an olive branch to the majority leader of the Senate, Mr. McConnell, when right out of the gate, McConnell pledges to make Obama presidency a failed presidency, not to mention that when a president fails, America fails? Okay.
He was so wrong to make that statement.
He was. He didn't say it exactly like that, but he was wrong to make the statement.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
Hello.
Just hurt him.
Yeah, it's just bad.
Hello, all. I can't stand listening to another minute of this. Trump, Cruz, really?
Try seven more months of it.
Why don't you talk about voting fraud and how badly the system works in Albany? And on and on. I live in Arbor Hill, and it's a longer letter. And David says, Bernie will stay in until the end because Clinton's legal troubles are not over at all. This will dog her well into September, and Bernie should be there when Hillary's support starts to drop, especially with independents. All right. Bernie is not attacking Hillary. He is telling the truth, says William. The truth is that Hillary is a liar. We'll say anything.
You're attacking Hillary.
We'll say anything she has to get elected and when she represents the interests of the super wealthy. Okay. And remember, keep these letters short because I'm not going to read them otherwise.
140 characters. That's what we asked for.
Okay. And All right. Jerry says, yeah, that's Jerry. Pulling out the old cherry Obama needed to show leadership makes my stomach turn. The Republicans made it clear that their objective is and was to have this president fail. And by the way, when did he meet them halfway in, as in the budget area? They kept, well, oh, I see. When he did meet them halfway, as in the budget area, they kept moving the goalpost. Please, dot, dot, dot. And Jack says, Sanders' only point in continuing is to keep Clinton from backtracking to the center. That's a possibility, by the way. That is a possibility.
That's probably the most the thing that's going to hurt her the most.
Yeah, once she turns centrist.
Yeah.
Win.
She's trying to tack to the middle, and he's stopping her now.
It's very hard to gutter people's motives. I mean, there'll be see people who write me and say, well, Sanders, he's double-crossing Hillary. He knows she's going to be the candidate. She should be allowed to go ahead, and he's just egoistic and wants to go to the convention. Some people believe, I don't know. I interviewed him probably more than anybody else, you know, probably 100 times on the Congressional Corner, and I found him to be a man of real principle. But I can't deal with the ego thing. Paul says, if the subject comes up, I don't like the idea of a pipeline through the Berkshires either. Americans doing much to reduce the amount of energy they use, but we fight coal, nuclear, gas pipelines, oil pipelines. There isn't even much support for renewable sources like wind and solar. These technologies aren't producing what we need now anyway. That was from my morning commentary this morning, and I said, "Who wants one of these things in the backyard? None of us, right?"
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, we're never going to get anywhere on recyclables and things while oil is at $30 a barrel. That's just the way it goes.
I just want to interrupt for a second to say that we have word from our engineering crew.
I was just about to.
They're going to
crack engineer.
There are some work being done on our tower. All right. So if you have trouble hearing us at the top of the hour at 10 o'clock, the reason is because there are people up there and we don't want to fry them.
Yeah.
So
or any of their parts.
Right. Or or any of their associated parts. So just know that if you have trouble getting the station, the work will be quick and minimal, but it is planned, and we will then move on.
Why wouldn't you do that work while the right wing guy is on? You would think that would hit two goals.
Well, I won't say this on the air, but I will tell you off the air. But it sort of depends on who's doing the work.
Okay.
and Sean says, Rich sounds like a tool to the right-wing media. The insanity of the Republican Party making it their primary mission to block Obama from day one. They are the party of no capital letters. And all that man President Obama was trying to do was clean up the mess left by George Bush.
And how does that caller or that writer respond to, Harry Reid over, the first 6 years of the administration, just saying no to everything? What's his response there? Or Nancy
Harry
Pelosi
saying no to
Obama? We have to pass it and then we could see what's in it. What do you do with that? Or Obama saying in the very first week of his presidency, well, I won, so that trumps you. That doesn't sound like reaching across the aisle. And I'm sorry, but anybody who's in any position of power knows that the more power you have, the less blatantly you can use it
Come
if you
on.
Actually want to get
no,
things
I,
done.
I agree with Rich.
I think
Obama squandered chances to really
I
make a difference.
I don't agree with Rich, and I don't agree with you. Not a bit. I'm telling you now that Obama tried his hardest, that they were the party of no, that these letters are right on target, and you're both wrong, so stop it. Peter says, anything that Congress passes with bipartisan support is still seen as the president's accomplishment, and the Republicans want to make sure that Obama has none and he's regarded as a failure. Interestingly, Peter, as you say that, and I agree with you, his numbers keep going up and up and up. People understand the game for what it is. Okay, that's that.
All right, let's take a break early. We'll take a break. We'll make up some stuff, and when we come back, we'll
go
to some other issue.
We never do that.
No, meaning that we went long, and we'll make up some time. So that's good. We want to get our underwriters make every yes, yeah. No, right. You just give us 30 seconds. We're going to make up some stuff, and then we're going to talk about that. We'll be right back. I just want you to know.
You're not going to bust her on that.
No, I just want you to know that the extensive research that our team does during the breaks is just to stay on top of the news of the world and what they do. It's really impressive. Absolutely impressive.
Did you want to mention what specifically?
No. I just want to say that I'm ever impressed by it, because it isn't just, and I know you, Rich, will often say, oh, you know, you're just reading the New York Times and regurgitating it as opposed, but there's a wide range of sources that our panelists.
Rosemary has headphones on. She's getting information from all people in the field, all sorts of sources. She's up to date.
Very good stuff. The Treasury Secretary on Wednesday announced the most sweeping and historically symbolic makeover of American currency in a century, proposing to replace the slaveholding Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill with Harriet Tubman, the former slave and abolitionist, and to add women and civil rights leaders to the $5 and $10 bills.
I have been advocating women and non-politicians on our currency for years, all over Eastern Europe and Asia and every other place I've traveled. There are non-politicians and women on currency, and now we will have it. I'm very pleased with this.
Now I'm going to read the second paragraph of this article, which I just think is so cool. The Treasury Secretary may have reneged on a commitment he made last year to make a woman the face of the $10 bill, opting instead to keep Alexander Hamilton, to the delight of a fan base swollen with enthusiasm over a Broadway rap musical based on the life of the first Treasury Secretary.
Right. So now if Lin-Manuel Miranda writes, if his next play is about Andrew Jackson, then Harriet Tubman is in deep trouble.
She gets cut off. I actually always advocated for Hamilton, not just because of the fantastic musical, but because he actually deserves to be on the currency. We have currency because of him. The banking system was set up by, if anyone deserves to be on the currency, it is he.
Your first Treasury guy.
Yeah. So, and also, I didn't want women to devalue to the $10. I like it that we're on the $20 bill. That was the original push, and I think it's great. And I also like the idea of keeping linking, but it'll be the back of the bill that will have Marian Anderson. That's fantastic.
Yeah, Marian Anderson.
Singer.
That's very cool.
Black woman. It's great.
Also,
and
have to
Eleanor.
And pointing out the New York State connection with Harriet Tubman, because she did, for a portion of her life, lived in, I hope I have this right, lived in Auburn.
Everybody's going to say,
oh, he's a racist, he doesn't know. I think that she actually bought land from William Seward in Auburn. So William Seward was living in Auburn while he was governor, and he sold a portion of his land in Auburn to Harriet Tubman. I'm going to say just before the 1860 election. If I'm wrong, then please, it's not politically motivated, but I'm pretty sure about that one.
So in the back of the $10 bill, it would be Sojourner Truth, Lucretia Mott, Susan B. Anthony, Alice Paul, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
Got to tell you,
suffragettes.
I don't know as much about Alice Paul. Every other one I could.
I know about her because I speak at International Women's Day, and she has really been overshadowed by Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. But it was remarkable, and we're voting, and even maybe being people for whom we vote because of these women.
The back of the $5 bill, Marian Anderson, Eleanor Roosevelt, Martin Luther King.
Yay.
Yeah, pretty cool. I heard a very snide comment yesterday on, I want to say MSNBC, but it may not have been. No, it was MSNBC. And they were talking about the beauty of these people. And that perhaps, you know, they really have to work on the image that they use, because these were not overly attractive
people. Like Abraham Lincoln.
That's not the point.
Well, it is the point about a sexist society. That's what it is.
That's not
sexist
the
point. And racist.
Society,
That's more commentary on MSNBC than it is on our society.
I think it mirrors a lot more than maybe just their view, but yes, okay. So we like this idea?
Yes.
You had mentioned the timing, though.
Well, it's going to take many years. I think it's 2020 before
it's a rollout.
Yeah, they yeah, it's a very long
now,
time,
Jackson
and I
stays
don't understand
on the
why exactly,
now,
but
now Jackson stays on the other side, though, doesn't he?
No, Jackson's out.
Tubman's gone, and then
she gets the front,
and then the back of the bills will feature these the newcomers.
I see.
The new class.
It's funny, Jackson hasn't weathered well as a kind of no. as a president. You know,
He's out of fashion.
Is it Robert Remini who's the big biographer of Andrew Jackson, and he wrote some great things about him, but there hasn't been anything out about him, you know, lately. You know, he's a lot of wars against the
Presidents
Native Americans. Jefferson is terribly out of favor now, but I think part of that is because of Hamilton, and part of that is because of the Adams biography of a few years ago.
Right.
Jackson just hasn't been big in the news.
Well, it isn't as if Washington and Jefferson didn't own slaves.
Also, very much so.
They did. So, you know, this is now the current rap.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's Reagan, who's a saint now. I don't remember him being a saint when he was in office. And
Theodore
Roosevelt has become.
He didn't own slaves, though. I mean,
no, he didn't own slaves. No, Theodore Roosevelt is very popular and
has been
now.
For years. His name his thing is up on Mount Rushmore.
Well, I was going to say.
In his own lifetime, he couldn't win as a third-party candidate.
Well, who wins as a third-party candidate?
Yeah, and also that's because the day after he was elected, he announced the next day, I'm not going to run again, which usurped most of his next term.
And
right.
Did
my lips, I'm not running again.
Right.
And didn't. And then
he went off to Africa for however long and then came back and decided.
He was an adventurer, which is why I think he has a lot of interest. Now, yeah. I have to correct a historical mistake, okay, because I've been hearing from people.
Yes.
Speaking, ironically enough, of kind of defending Trump for misspeaking and saying 7-11 instead of 9-11.
Yeah.
And I go, well, you know, that's where it came from was 7-11. That's why we don't say, or we never did say, 12-9 for Pearl Harbor. And someone wrote accurately, and I know this, we don't say 12-9 because Pearl Harbor was December 7th.
Yeah, 12-7.
I do know that. Yeah. I misspoke.
That's fine. Don't let him get you down.
The day that will live in infamy, except for yesterday. Hey, Curt Schilling got fired. I don't know about you, but I'm happy.
He deserved it. I just spoke even in favor of Donald Trump getting a bad rap for misspeaking, but he is not misspeaking. He is vile and he's done repeated things.
He has done. I mean, from the time of the World Series win, when he has been on the Today Show and has advocated for various candidates, which is fine, obviously, freedom. So that's fine. But then to put it to a level of various memes that are very. Well, insensitive is the least of it, and disturbing and racist, and to continually doing it, and as last year was benched for a long time by ESPN, and then they said, okay, well you can come back, just don't do this, this, and this, and then. A week later, that's exactly what he does.
Look, it's just his stupidity and not realizing, look, I'm a rich white conservative guy. I have a short leash anyway. And then he decides to make stupid remarks about Islam or now LGBTQ, people. He's just for stupidity alone, he should be fired.
I have to stop right here and say that Julie wrote us a note and said what I thought was true. Jackson, and now in capital letters, does remain on the back of the 20. And if that weren't true, NPR got it wrong yesterday. That's where I got it from.
I thought Jackson was being removed.
No, he's being removed from the
front.
Primary side.
Hmm.
But he's going to stay on the back.
Okay.
All right. There we go.
I just like to take credit where credit is due.
Was that Julie? Thank you. That's
okay. So going back to Curt Schilling, a man is a man no matter what they call themselves. I don't care what they are, who they sleep with. Men's room was designed for the penis. Women's not so much. Now you need laws telling us differently. Pathetic.
Yeah,
gets you fired.
Yeah, and should,
right?
Yeah.
The other problem with this is it's. It's obviously a more subtle issue than that, and then when somebody comes in with a stupid blunderbuss than that, it stops us from talking about an issue that I think does deserve, and everybody's going to jump on me, but does deserve a little bit of conversation. Not so much on the men, but just people getting their arms around this idea that there's people now who self-identify as pansexual, as asexual, as androgynous, and it would. you would think that people would be allowed to, you know, have some inquiry and ask about that and have views on that, which I think is, I think that's fair. What he does eliminates, you know, eliminates that. I mean, I'm talking to people now who will not use a gender-specific pronoun in referring to themselves. So they refer to themselves as they. So in other words, you can't say, I saw Rosemary today, she was fine. You have to say, I saw Rosemary today, they were fine.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, to me, I think that's worth it. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I think I'm allowed to inquire about that and say, and add my own views. Well, to me, that actually almost sounds dehumanizing. But I now cannot have this discussion because this idiot, you know, has taken it out of...
For years, the rule in English was that you use he, you defer to he. So,
and that changed.
And that was bad.
Right.
And I've taught people for years to use the plural to get around that. So I'm not so upset by the idea of we use a gender, a pronoun that's all inclusive. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is interesting that we need a whole new vocabulary for this whole new situation. Cisgender is one of those words that's now come into vogue. We never used that before.
Well, how about the Q with the L of LGBTQ, right?
Yeah,
that used to be a verboten word, right?
Well, it was accepted. It was used as a pejorative, then it was adopted by the community as a way to.
Woe be he or she or they who said from the outside, use the Q word. You know, it's like it's people within a group often, you know, mock the whole thing by using those words themselves.
The N word is a big example.
Well, that's not exactly true because queer used to be an actual word that had nothing to do with sexuality.
Exactly right.
So
as did
that's
gay.
Not exactly as did gay. Exactly.
Right. I do,
and so I'm not. I just wanted to be before people start. I think Schilling should have been fired.
Yes.
But I do think that we ask for these conversations about flexibility and tolerance, and then we have the discussions with an unbelievable degree of inflexibility and intolerance. And I think that we should be able to discuss issues like that a guy like this comes in and just obliterates our ability to have that discussion.
I do want to to Alan's point earlier and to. Clarify what Julie said. So now presidential scholar Barbara Perry has said that it was a very odd choice to have President Andrew Jackson, a slave owner, sharing a bill with a black abolitionist, Harriet Tubman, making for interesting dollar fellows, she said. In some ways, I guess it's the best balance, but it does seem odd.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So... that will be
not just a slave owner, like an active slave trader, you know, Jackson. And I have a
friend who wrote about how nice it will be. He imagines the scene where a pickup truck with a Confederate flag in the back and a Mississippi license plate pulls up to an ATM and pulls out a whole bunch of Harriet Tubmans.
That's great.
Good point. All right. And finally, let's just end. We only have about 3 minutes.
That's a great headline. Harriet Tubman and Andrew Jackson, a $20 odd couple.
Pretty good, isn't it?
I do like that.
Russia bolsters its submarine fleet and tensions with the U.S. rise. This comes after a spate of scary flyovers, very close calls in the air, in the water, and now the submarine fleet. Alan.
You should go to WMC.org and go to Congressional Corner and get my interview with Joe Courtney, the congressman, who is, of course, the congressman who has to make sure that we keep building submarines in his district. And, you know, I've always looked somewhat askance at the idea that we should we should spend several billion dollars to build submarines at a time when we really don't need them. His position, and you should listen to it, is that some of our scarier adversaries have them. Now, I'm not buying, to be perfectly honest with you, but I talked to him about this not more than a week ago, and then we now get this with the Russian submarines.
Yeah, and it's scary. I mean, I think he would probably say that we are still significantly further ahead on the technology that goes in our submarines.
We are, and on the number.
Certainly
the total
defensively, but, you know, it's a big world, and when you're dealing with these, you're dealing with stuff like curvature of the Earth and the ability to take down missiles that might be going a missile, not to reprise our old argument, but you know, if you're trying to take out a missile going from Iran to Israel or from North Korea to somewhere else, you might well use a sub.
I was we're gonna end there, but I was fact-checking something that came up earlier, and then since then we've been getting a lot of letters on this as well.
Was I wrong about Auburn?
No, the okay. Q is questioning. The Q stands for questioning. An LGBTQ.
Okay. I was talking to an LGBTQ advocate
who
told
me
it was the other
word.
We're
out of time.
Okay.
But that, okay. All right. Good. All right.
I only say three words. Three words. Military industrial complex. That's the rationale for building
Soviet the intentions. That's what we should really be worried about.
I have to talk to my activists and tell them to get their letters right.
Suddenly this has become a McLaughlin report. When did that happen? All right, we'll continue with the roundtable after this break.